Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. I am happy this week to have with me Alex from Minotaur. He is going to be talking about their ventilation products, running us through a bit of a primer on the different types of options for high-performance buildings, and we will see where we go from there. So, Alex, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Sean, for having me around.
Of course. No, I'm thrilled that we're able to get this set up. So for people that don't know you, maybe tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into the high-performance side of the construction industry.
Well, that started a long time ago, being the son of a builder who in 1965 put aluminum foil behind wood planks in our living room to radiate, heat waves inside our living room. So I grew up in the industry, the construction industry, and I did take some lessons in the industry. I've got different diplomas in building construction, building instruction. I also went to Germany to get trained regarding the passive house standard over there. Look forward to do the same here with the U.S. With FIES, Passive House Institute U.S. Because I am agnostic as long as it is passive house. I also worked in the past at Fantech System Air. So I've been in the industry for about, 15 years there. And been raised by a father who used to tell me, Alex, if you build something, build it right. So I was, at a pretty young age, a young adept of, over-engineering and over-engineered stuff, built the stronger than necessary, but at least it's going to hold up, as long as it needs. So that's on a personal level, this is where I'm coming from. I had a chance to work for, like I said, Fantech System Air for 3 years, back in 2006 until 2009. I was in charge of sales in Quebec as technical sales rep. And I climbed the ladder at different organizations. And I was introduced to Passive House in 2010 for the first time. I've read on the subject. Plus, I saw my first passive building in Quebec, in Montebello. That house is not certified, I think, but it was really built according to the passive house principles. And when I saw that 24-inch thick wall full of cellulose, I said, okay, wow, okay. So it's simple, it's feasible. And for me, it was like an epiphany. It's like, from now on, this is how we should build, because it's not rocket science, it's building science. By fantastic chance, I've met my business partner, Carl O'Day, who's our CEO and our lead engineer, who designed the ancestor of the units that we're now manufacturing. It was a very nice encounter, and we're working hard, pushing the envelope, having also the slogan that Minotaur, the science of air. So we have high expectations. We have high levels of not necessarily confidence, but yeah, we have confidence. But at the same time, we're aiming high, and I think that we're going in the right direction. We're still learning every day. We're trying to be as humble as possible, but we are a bunch of experienced people on board, and I think that we will be able to go where we need to go.
Okay. So, if we look at kind of traditional or code-built homes in Canada, they typically, ventilation-wise, we focus a lot on heating the air, a little bit on conditioning the air, like air conditioning in certain mm-hmm. climates. But as far as the actual ventilation, there's not a lot of focus on making that a balanced or kind of planned system. We just assume that the envelope is going to leak, some air will come in, and we heat that air up and try and keep the heated air in as much as we can, and, don't kill us with carbon monoxide. And that's about the only thing we really kind of focus on. Maybe I'm putting a little bit too fine of a point on it, but that's all right. right? With high performance buildings, obviously that's no longer an option. And you know, I'm talking to homeowners, what I quite often hear from them is, well, you know, if the house is so airtight, you know, how am I going to breathe? You know, I still have to be able to open a window, you know, how does that work? So maybe you could talk about kind of some of the high performance options, and then lead into kind of your system and some of the things that I know make it a little bit unique in the market for sure.
So in Canada, we have a long, I know that we have people from the States will listen to the actual podcast. And by the way, hello to you folks down there south of the border. So to have people understand that in Canada for over 20 years, it's being, you know, it's mandatory by the building code to have mechanical ventilation. This is why companies like Fantech, Liabreath, Vanmar, Aldes, and others do exist. And this is why we have a standard mechanic called CSA 439, who's the standard to test residential HRVs and ERVs. And actually, I think it's still the case. There's only one lab in North America to test residential HRVs and ERVs for performances, for ventilation performances. And it is in Mississauga, Ontario at Exova. So all that to say that it's, like you said, in a high-performance home, in a tidier house, it is critical to have mechanical ventilation. And from there, what we see mostly are great quality machines doing a very, very good ventilation job in terms of, you know, either heat recovery and a bit of moisture recovery. But I think that in the 21st century, we look at the bigger scope of things, what we need to do in those high-performance homes, and how can we achieve, you know, a better level of comfort and health. And this is where we need to take care of five things, which is, you know, of course, balance, fresh air, ventilation. We need to do some cooling, some heating. More and more, some dehumidification, which is something that we hear in high-performance buildings, conferences, you know, the importance, especially in the last 10 years, the importance of doing, you know, a good, decent dehumidification. And very important to understand, as interesting as ERVs may sound, especially in their name, energy recovery ventilator, it's very, you know, very catchy. You know, I'm going to sell you an ERV. An ERV is not a dehumidifier. I've got customers who install top brand ERVs and they are not happy because they were expecting those ERVs to manage excess moisture in the summertime, which for now they are not designed for. An ERV will transfer moisture from one airstream to a drier airstream. And so as great an ERV can be, it's not made in the first place to remove 20, 30, 40, 50 liters of moisture per day. You know, a dehumidifier is able to do that. And ultimately...
Okay, so just to jump in real quick, just for people that are listening. So there's HRVs, which is a heat recovery ventilator. Mm-hmm. They strictly work by taking some of the heat energy out of the outgoing air and putting it into the incoming air. There's no moisture transfer.
So that's an HRV, yeah. Heat recovery ventilator.
And so then an ERV allows for some equalization of moisture between the two streams of air, the outgoing air and the incoming air. But what you're saying is it's not capable of functioning as a true dehumidifier because it can't take out enough moisture, especially if the incoming air, I would imagine, is also fairly humid and moist.
Exactly. So it's building science. The thing is, like I said, a ERV, when you look at an ERV core, each plate will transfer moisture from one side to the other only if the other side is drier. Because, you know, building science teaches us that, you know, moisture goes from the wet side to the dry side. So if we take a house in July in Montreal, per se, where it can be surprisingly very, very hot and humid in the summertime, almost as hot and humid as in Boston or even New York City. If we have an ERV, let's take the best of them out there. So what's going to happen is you're going to get, you know, moist air from outside. The core will catch a portion of the moisture molecules, and then, you know, you're going to have fresh air inside. Of course, you're going to exhaust, you know, that fresh air that you have indoor. You're going to also bring it outside. So the thing is, because your first pass of the fresh air going from outdoor to indoor, now the core is unable to remove all entirely the moisture out of it. Well, your house is, you know, let's presume that you have you have no cooling device. You don't have a heat pump or an AC in your house. Okay, just for the sake of having a better understanding of how it works. So you don't have an AC, but you have an ERV. The thing is, you're having more and more moisture molecules, you know, that is stacking up in your air inside your building, to the point where you get to what we call the moisture vicious circle, where you have an equilibrium between, you know, the moisture, you know, that you have from the exhausting stream compared to the fresh air stream. So at that point, that vicious circle keeps more and more moisture inside. Therefore, you don't feel it if you have an AC machine or a heat pump doing cooling. But if you don't, you're gonna, at the end, you might end up with more moisture inside your house than outside. So that's why that an ERV in winter is interesting, because it's going to help to keep moisture inside. But in the summertime, it's not your friend.
Okay, so I understand that in the summertime, that makes a lot of sense. What then with your system, how is that addressed, that moisture cycle?
That's a great question, and for which I'll try to give you a great answer. So because our machines are at their base, you know, a heat pump, we are definitely able to do dehumidification by cooling. And by saying that, it's like cooling but a lower CFM rate, permitting the air to have more time by crossing one of the two coils, by letting the coil having more time to condensate, you know, the moisture molecules part of the air. So instead of running at 250 CFM, which is the maximum speed we have, when we work in dehumidification, in recirculation mode, we are running between 120, 130 up to 180 CFM maximum to permit, you know, like I said, the coil to be able to condensate, you know, the moisture out of the air. Okay. So this is why, you know, we are able to do that. And daily we are able to remove up to 50 liters of moisture, or for our friends south of the border, 112 pints of moisture per day, which is 3 to 4 times more moisture than an equivalent size regular heat pump could do. You know, so this is very important. Also, we are able to do that not only in recirculation, but also when we are bringing fresh air from outside. So it's a two-stage dehumidification process. When we get air from outside in air exchange mode, or, you know, HRV mode, where we are able to remove a portion of the moisture coming inside the house. But when our machine goes back in recirculation mode to do dehumidification by cooling, then we're able to do stage two of the dehumidification. And this is where we are able to remove the bulk of the cooling. You know, like I said, up to 52 liters all per day, or 112 pints, which is, you know, usually more than enough for a house to be easily, 4,000 square feet in size, if not more. So we would say that the vast majority of apartments and homes in North America would be able to manage the excess moisture with our units.
So with your unit, then, it's able to dehumidify in both phases. It obviously also operates as ventilation. Is there any other steps that it kind of covers in that?
The fifth portion of what it does is, you know, filtration, because I said that machine is capable, all machines are capable of doing balanced fresh air ventilation, heating, cooling, dehumidification, just like I explained, and also high efficiency filtration with a standard HEPA MERV 15 filter. So with a gasket, we are, to my knowledge, we are the only residential manufacturer having such a high standard instead of HEPA filtration level at MERV 15, and also the only one with, you know, a gasket. So when you push the filter and its enclosure, it feels tight. It's not loose, you know. It's not super hard to put it there, but you feel a resistance big enough to make sure that you have really the tightness necessary to do a proper high quality filtration. You know, so I also that's very interesting, especially if you live, you know, in a city near a highway or a place where it's really dusty, or you have a lot of traffic, you know, trucks and everything, buses, whatever. So it does really great job, a great difference in terms of, you know, air filtration, you know, with the PM2.5 particles per se.
Wow. I mean, that's, like you said, if you live in an urban area, but even if you live in more of a suburban area, you know, out here in Vancouver, where I'm based, you know, we have had, not last season, thankfully, but before that, we had quite bad forest fire seasons. There's a lot of smoke, a lot of particulates in the air. And I know that people who had filtration on the air coming into their homes were quite shocked when they were going to change their filters and looking and seeing what had actually been pulled out of the air that normally their lungs would have to be filtering.
Exactly.
So that's definitely an important thing to do. So it heats, it cools, dehumidifies, ventilates, and filters the air.
Exactly.
Give me a bit of an idea of the size of the unit and what kind of building types and sizes would you normally use it for?
So you just mentioned the five things that the units take care of, and that explains the name of those units, which is the Pentacare. No, the Pentacare series. So actually what we manufacture is the Pentacare V12, V for vertical port, and 12 for almost 12,000 BTUs of cooling. Okay. And to be honest with you, being a car buff, finding the name V12 was, you know, kind of a reference to V12 cars, which are high performance cars, you know, but there's a logic behind the name, you know, the Pentacare V12. So to answer the question regarding size, there are two ways to look at how to use our systems. Number one, as some people say, it is considered by more and more people as the Tesla or the Porsche of fresh air appliance. So you could put our systems in any homes to become the best set of lungs for any house, taking care of all the things that we are doing with our units. You know, so you have a 3,500, 4,000 square feet house, chances are that we'll be able to ventilate it, do whole house balance, fresh air ventilation, do whole house dehumidification, and do the whole house, you know, air filtration. So right there, any homes in North America, we're able to take care of that. And on top of that, as a bonus, you're going to have supplemental heating and cooling. But where it becomes to be very, very interesting is in the high performance home markets, where in many cases, our systems become the all-in-one D plus HVAC system. D for dehumidification, you know, HVAC for, you know, heating, ventilation, air conditioning. And this is where we see customers like, you know, Onion Flats in Philly, who bought and installed 28 of our units, coming back for 96 units for two buildings, because they realized that they are able to use one system per apartment. In their case, it's a passive house envelope building, and they are able to use our systems, one per apartment. And the physical size permits that. You know, you need only a physical space of 4 feet of height, 4 feet of width, and also a depth of 2 feet, you know, to put one of our units in. Therefore, the unit itself is only 40 inches long, 18 inches of depth, and a height of 16 inches and a half, weighing 112 pounds. You know, I personally move a demonstration unit with me in the back of my station wagon, you know, and I put I put that on the dolly and move it, you know, and go and see engineers, you know, and architects, and builders, you know, and doing trade shows where you and I meet each other once in a while. It is that compact, you know, and still, and especially in the multifamily buildings, the rule of thumb is we are able to take care of heating, cooling up to about 1,000 square feet of a passive house enclosure. If you have a passive house, the rule of thumb is up. You know, if it's 1,000 square feet, we're able to take care of the heating cooling loads. But, and that is important, what we say officially is have a calculated heating cooling loads being done. You know, it's logical, but, you know, but still, we still have a rule of thumb to have, you know, kind of a rough idea of how big a house it can take care for, you know, not only fresh air, but heating and cooling, you know. But what we say as a serious manufacturer, say, have your energy advisor or your mechanical contractor or your mechanical engineer to do a proper, you know, heating and cooling loads, either with PHPP or, you know, or Wi-Fi passive or other softwares, you know. But yeah, so that concept of having a decentralized, or what I do prefer called autonomous, you know, mechanical system, one per apartment, the idea is not new. We hear more and more specialists, you know, talk about the subject. You know, there's an article in the ASHRAE Journal of, I think it's July or August 2019, where the great Dr. Joe Stiebrick wrote a 6-page article on the subject. And the subject was the importance for multifamily buildings to have airtight apartments, you know, aside each other, where you can, if you are in apartment A, that, well, apartment B cannot smell, you know, the great food you're cooking in your house because, you know, your apartment is tight enough. So the article refers to that. And the principles are great in the sense where, you know, it's more efficient on many levels, in the sense where you don't have long lines of refrigerant. You don't have long ductwork going, you know, from the rooftop per se to go to, you know, the different apartments. And what building owners and building managers love about our units is the fact that, you know, they keep an extra unit on the premises. Not because we have, you know, unreliable technologies, just that because if they need to remove, you know, a unit, and we know even the best products out there sometimes do fail, you know, over time, which is, you know, normal. Well, at least having one or two units on the premises, they are able to swap within an hour with two regular maintenance personnel. They are able to swap an entire HVAC system. So when's the last time, you know, Sean, that you heard that simply two maintenance personnel, not HVAC technicians, but regular maintenance personnel, were able to swap an entire mechanical system within an hour? Right, just there, that's another first, you know. It had been never done to our knowledge, you know. So that decentralized / autonomous concept has other values, like, you know, if a system goes down, well, it's not the entire building or half of the building, you know. Tim McDonald said that, you know, personally, part of one webinar that you can find, you know, it was, I think, for the wood industry. He mentioned that it's one of the reasons why he bought our system. It's because, you know, if a system goes down, it's not the entire building or half of the building. So we are happy to be part of what is seen as the way of the future, especially when you have people like Dr. Joe Stiebrick, you know, promoting and that concept, you know, and there are others out there. What we've been told, you know, what we do is cheaper, more, you know, more effective, more efficient, you know, and faster to do. So my little finger tells me that we're going to see more and more products like ours, you know, but as you know, Sean, you know, to copy a product is, you know, is a form of, how do we say in English, flattery?
Yes. No, that's interesting. So, that sounds to me like a pretty ideal situation for a multifamily project, especially one with a high-performance envelope. Looking at a multifamily, you know, something that often comes up, especially for rental buildings, is maintenance. These units obviously are going to be within each apartment's little airtight envelope. Mm-hmm. What kind of maintenance is required, and how often, you know, roughly is that normally looked at?
So we have two sets of filters, two regular MERV 8 filters to keep each of the coils clean. And there's the HEPA MERV 15 filter, you know, for us human beings. So the MERV 8 filters, we ask to have them, you know, change every 3 months. And the HEPA filter is good at least for a year. So in a multifamily building, what we are recommending in the last months now to people to who we're talking with is to have a mechanical closet, not necessarily part of the apartment, but just beside the apartment with the main, with the door part of the corridor. So like this, you don't need someone to get inside the apartment or the condominium, you know, to take care of the maintenance. And you are able also to put two units in one single mechanical closet if you want. Of course, in that case, one would have to have to use fire dampers. But if you have only one unit, part of one apartment, the fire damper is not required. But if you put two, in that case, you would have to. Okay. So actually, we have a project in Washington for almost 200 units where this is what they want to do. They want to build a multifamily building for one, you know, for almost 2,000 units with that concept where you're gonna, they're going to put 2 units per mechanical closet, and they will have, of course, to put fire dampers. Well, I presume that they will have to, but pretty sure that they will have to. So still, even if they have to pay to get and install fire dampers, at the end of the day, it's going to be cheaper than use VRF systems and, you know, centralized, you know, rooftop HRVs or ERVs. Now, this is what we've been told, you know, by customers who are buying from us.
I mean, that sounds really interesting, certainly for that type of building. If you're switching gears a little bit and looking at single-family high-performance buildings, which is a lot of the people listening to the show are focused on that, you said, you know, 1,000 square feet is kind of the ideal for providing heating and cooling. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that it's probably the heating and maybe a little bit the cooling that's causing that limitation. Can your product go into a single family, say 3,000 square foot home, and basically replace the HRV or ERV and offer some heating and cooling, and then have makeup heating and cooling make up the rest? Or how would you approach a 3,000 square foot single family passive house?
Well, like I said, the rule of thumb is for one unit for about 1,000 square feet of a passive house enclosure. In the case of a 3,000 square feet, we would need, in that case, either three of our units. You know, we have a great customer who's a great passive house builder in Connecticut. His name is Bill Freeman from Celebration Green. And him and his wife, Alicia Dolce, who's also you know, a passive house pioneer. Both of them are, by the way, co-founders of Connecticut Passive House. And I would like to say hi to them at the same time. So they built themselves over a year ago a 2,000 square feet passive house home on two levels. So what they've done, they put one unit per floor, you know, which is 1,000 square feet, you know, and on top of the garages, they have a 850 square feet apartment where they put a third of our third unit, you know. So in your case, 3,000 square feet, we would use either three units, or we could do what Unity Homes from the Bensonwood Group in New Hampshire did in some of their homes with our systems. They put one Panther Care unit, and so and plus a Mitsubishi, you know, additional heat pump. So in that case, it was a 2,100 square feet house, two levels, high performance, not passive house, but high performance, well above code. And what we've done with them is we put one of our units in. So our units were taking care of the whole house ventilation, whole house dehumidification, whole house air filtration, plus, you know, stage one for heating and cooling. The 18,000 BTUs. Sorry about that. Yeah, the 18,000 BTUs Mitsubishi heat pump. It was a ductless head that had been installed in the large room of the house on the main floor, which is, of course, you know, the living room, the dining room, and kitchen. We are using, by the way, because we work with, you know, with Mitsubishi in the U.S., we are using their interface module permitting our systems to control and trigger the Mitsubishi heat pump. So when we need additional heating and cooling, either in parallel or instead of our systems, now we are able to trigger that Mitsubishi, you know. And ultimately, we keep a 5,000 square feet duct heater, part of our system, part of our ductwork, as a last line of defense for heating, because, you know, in some rare cases, in very cold nights, even, you know, the best cold climate heat pumps like the ones from Mitsubishi are not able to cope, you know, with enough heating in some rare cases. So that's why that we have a 17,000 BTUs or 5 kW electric duct heater, fully variable in intensity, part of that concept, which is taking care of the third, you know, heating stage. So again, in that case, we're talking of 18,000 BTUs for a 2,100 square feet high-performance home. So probably, I don't know, 24 or 36,000 BTUs would be needed. I don't know. I don't have the calculations in front of my eyes. But the idea is we would be able to do a lot of great things with our units, part of that 3,000 square feet passive house, and we wouldn't get additional, you know, cooling and heating with, you know, an additional heat pump or, you know, one unit with two heads, depending. So there's a lot. So there's some flexibility. We are able also to connect a central system, a furnace, you know, an air handler, and we are able, our units are able to control the air handler, the fan of the air handler, you know, the heat pump of the air handler. So I was talking about Mitsubishi. Our CEO and lead engineer has in his, you know, countryside cottage, a Mitsubishi Zuba Central, which is a Mitsubishi air handler with a Mitsubishi heat pump part of it, you know. So we are able to also to control that and to work in conjunction of that system. So, yeah. So so this is how we would do it. So we have, you know, we have a lot of flexibility. I mentioned using Mitsubishi air handler units, but it could be, you know, train, carrier, Lennox, whatever. No, but we are lucky that we have a fantastic relationship with Mitsubishi, actually. Of course, they are out there, other great manufacturers of heat pumps. But actually, what we've done is, you know, is to work with Mitsubishi.
All right, Alex. Well, it sounds like a pretty interesting system. I mean, it certainly sounds like you have good options for multifamily, single family homes, all kind of within that high performance envelope and kind of medium performance buildings as well. I will be putting links to Alex's company with the podcast description, also on social media. So make sure you check that out. Beyond that, Alex, thank you very much for your time to be on the show.
Well, Sean McStay, thank you very much for the invitation. And please continue your interviews. You know, what you've done so far is great, and it's helping the industry, and it's also helping people living in better homes, you know, and being more controlled, but ultimately healthier. And that's a noble cause. Thanks.
Well, that definitely is the goal. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you, Sean. Bye-bye.